You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for more, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and I host the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Flying co-pilot with me, as she always does, is Annie DeRiso, our news director, and she's going to be bringing us a whole plethora of news in the last half hour. I hope we have time to squeeze all that in, Andy. That's quite a mouthful that you sent me. And we're going to have to be expeditious in our coverage. Also in the third hour, we'll be having Katie Whalen joining us with part two of her health report from last week on the importance of healing, how it's accomplished, and so forth. And I'll tell you, get down to some base root quantum physics principles here, and Katie has a unique talent to make it simple. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by John DeRash, and he's the person I've spoken of on this show that's going to be instituting, or is instituting, I should say, citizen grand juries and going after public officials who violate their oath of office. And we're going to link this into the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well as Jade Helm. So we've got an action-packed 2 hours, but in our first hour, let me just set up the piece by saying this. Yesterday, I took my 14-year-old son, who's still got 1 foot in the superheroes and kind of moving out of that, but he said to me yesterday after we went golfing, Dad, I want to go see the Avengers new movie. So I said, sure. So after sitting through 2 hours of watching buildings get destroyed and New World Order dialogue, I was stunned at how out in the open the transhumanism concepts of wiping out humanity with AI on behalf of AI and all the things we're going to hear from our first guest this evening, it's there in the Avengers movie. Now, I don't think it's good adult viewing. I wasn't terribly entertained. I was a little restless, and I'm glad the popcorn was good. But it's almost worth the trip for them to tell you in predictive programming manner what's coming. But to expedite that process tonight, we have August Review's Patrick Wood with us, who's written a terrific book called Technocracy Rising. And Pat, as you recall, was on several weeks ago and talked about the concepts of technocracy as an economy and a political system and so forth. And I invited him back tonight to exclusively talk about transhumanism. So, Pat, welcome to the show, and I'm really looking forward to getting in to the meat of the matter on this important topic.
Absolutely. Me too, Dave. This is an important topic. You just can't underestimate it.
Well, these guys are serious. The elite are serious about getting rid of 90% of us, achieving immortality. So let's jump into how they're going to do all this.
Okay. Well, transhumanism is kind of the Siamese twin of technocracy. Both of the topics, both of the philosophies, if you will, are based on scientism, which is one of those ism philosophies that basically puts God, puts science as a god, and the scientists and engineers as priests to that god, to kind of tell us what, you know, what their god of science says to them, so that we lesser people can just kind of obey whatever science said, according to these priests. So transhumanism is really an interesting topic, and yes, it is over the top, out of the bag, just about everywhere in Silicon Valley right now, whether it's Google, whether it's Peter Thiel, the co-founder of PayPal originally. They're openly talking about escaping the laws of death and sin by overcoming the human condition of mankind. That's exactly what they're saying. they're going to become gods. It's incredible.
Exactly what are the mechanisms they're going to use? Is it going to be created by the artificial intelligence that they create?
Well, no, not just artificial intelligence. You see, in the past 10 years, at universities all around the world, there's been a new kind of science department that's been created. Arizona State University, right here in our hometown, has such a department, and it's called Convergent Science. And
yes.
Convergent Science actually merges four different branches of science into one. You have nanotechnology, which, of course, is the study of atomic matter and the control and manipulation of atomic matter. You have mind sciences, which is the control, you know, the control of the mind and the, you know, the makeup of the mind. You have information sciences, and you have biotechnology, which has to do with genetics and the human genome. And you put all those four sciences together, they're all based on, things that are very similar to computer code, you know, ones and zeros and A, B, C, D, and that sort of thing. And they believe that the combination of these sciences gives them the ability to literally create and massage and manipulate life itself. So whether it's manipulating the human genome, whether it's manipulating the mind, or whether it's manipulating matter itself, they feel, and of course computer science adds in, that's the method of control, they believe that they have in their hands everything they need to control evolution from here on. In other words, forget random chance evolution. This is a new type. This is evolution by scientists. And they actually have stated outright that they now believe that they will control the evolutionary process themselves from here on.
That is, I'm almost speechless. I was actually at the conference where I was invited as a guest. Surprisingly, they didn't know me very well then, but it was about 8 or 9 years ago. And when ASU rolled out their new program, basically it's under the banner of environmentalism, but it gets into what you're talking about. I believe they referred to it at that time as synchronicity. And they were pretty open about what they wanted to do. They said, we'll be able to extend lifespan, but it won't be available to the masses for a very long time. And they were quite open about it. But this is what concerns me. Who gives them the right to play God and give themselves additional medical benefits that they'll be able to derive benefit from while the rest of us peons get nothing?
Well, of course, the promise that they give to the rest of us is that the technology that they, they come up with will be available to all of us. That obviously, it just can't be true because it's going to be very expensive for one thing, whatever they dream up. But I will say this, whatever they think they're going to do, the jury is still out of whether they're going to be able to do it or not. You know, they want to extend the lifespan of man. They really like to just achieve immortality, like the engineer scientist Ray Kurzweil says. He's the chief of engineering at Google, by the way. And whether they're going to be able to do this or not is another issue. They say they're going to do it. They have some anecdotal evidence that they're making progress. But the fact is, over the past, let's say, 30 years, since this has really been kind of cooking as a philosophy, and then the last 10 to 15 years when it's really been cooking, when the universities got behind it, they haven't come up with one thing yet that demonstrably measures, that demonstrably proves that they're 1 inch closer to their goal. So there's a very good possibility, Dave, that this whole talk about transhumanism might really just be a giant deception.
Oh, really?
That they have fallen into. Now, they're not putting it out. They really believe this stuff. I'm convinced of that. But I'm also convinced that they are deceived into thinking that they can achieve it. And one of the reasons I say this, you know, for the last thousands of years, man has been trying to figure out ways to get into immortality, you know, to achieve immortality.
Sure.
And of course, whole religious systems have been created around that whole thought. And metaphysical systems have been created around the thought of achieving immortality. Have they ever made it? Any of them? No, they haven't. We're all still dying. Everybody still dies. In fact, the Bible says it's appointed to man once to die, and then comes the judgment. So, they're kind of playing with fire in a sense, thinking that they're going to outrace the hand of God and the law of God in this, but they're not any closer today to achieving their goal than anybody that came before them. The thing now is that they have science on their side, if you will. You know, it's kind of like the big carrot, right? They say, wow, now that we have science, you know, we're really rolling on this. Well, we've mapped the human genome, and we're doing these genetic experiments, and, you know, we've got computers now, supercomputers, and we're doing AI, and, you know, we have the rudiments of manipulating matter through nanotechnology and creating, you know, new forms of matter and rearranging matter on demand, kind of like the old Star Trek movies, you know. And, you know, on one hand, you say, well, yeah, they've made a lot of scientific, you know, breakthroughs and stuff, but has it moved man any closer to a condition of immortality? I would say, no, it hasn't. Not a bit. And so they're still kind of betting on the come, if you will. You know, it's like, okay, guys, we'll see. Let's wait until 2045. Like, that's the date that Ray Kurzweil predicted that the singularity would take place and, you know, machines would race ahead of the ability of man to conceive, you know, what they were doing by themselves. We'll see, you know, if we're still around 2045, we'll see who's right and if they were deceived or not.
So you think it's a matter of lack of technical expertise than them being deceived by an external force? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, all I'm saying is they have bought into a paradigm, a meme, if you will. What they want to do, just if there was no science at all, what they want to do is the same thing man has always wanted to do. That is escape death, period. Man has never done it through metaphysical means, to all the philosophies of the world, never done it. Whether it's Hinduism that believes in, you know, different levels of reality and so on, they've never done it. But now they have science to fiddle around with, and they believe that they're making breakthroughs in science that will actually allow them to achieve immortality. All I'm saying is I question whether they really have the proof or if they just have the hope of proof, which are two different things, you understand?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I'm saying right now that they haven't anything that they can really say, okay, here's the proof. Here's something we've done that tangibly brings us to that state of immortality.
But, Pat, I don't think they would share that with us. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. When I've taught my undergraduate sociology classes, there's a phrase that sociologists like to use called technological lag. And by that, they mean that when the elite have something, they then, through their scientists, farm it out, usually to the military first. And then 30, 40 years later, this technology in some form makes its way into the general public. The internet, microwave ovens, and so forth are examples of that. How do we know that they don't have these great advances or at least making progress, but they're simply just not telling us?
Well, that's a possibility, but I think there's enough information in the public domain at this point. And I have to say that, no, it's not. It's not in USA Today, okay? You're not going to find it there, so don't go look there. But there's a lot of information in the public domain. If you go to these universities, if you listen to people that are following transhumanism, you'll find lots of stuff. Even Ray Kurzweil wrote a book that has a lot of stuff in it that you know, tells about what he's doing. So there's quite a bit of information out there that we can track what these people are thinking, you know, what they're trying to do. But they just haven't demonstrated yet that they've actually done anything that would move them one day closer to a condition of immortality. You know, but then again, I will say maybe in 10 years it's going to be a different story. But, you know, I look back to the track record of these people, and I don't find anything that's very good. You look at the Trilateral Commission's New International Economic Order that they said they're going to start back in 1973, and they've had all the power ever since then to do it. And you look around at the world and the condition of the economic condition of the world today, and ask yourself, are we better off today than 40 years ago, or is the world economy absolutely broken? Well, it's absolutely broken. It's, you know, whatever they said they were going to do with all of their PhDs and, you know, scientific methods and everything else, they haven't achieved some kind of economic nirvana for anybody. They haven't eliminated poverty. They haven't eliminated disease. They haven't, lifted the middle class anywhere out of poverty. It's all getting worse, measurably worse. So the whole dream that these people, you know, put out initially, it's failed. It's just absolutely failed. And, you know, the people on the transhuman side, they have a lot of failures right now too, even though they're leaning into their science, trying to make it say something. But you know, sometimes science just won't say what you want it to say. Like global warming, for instance, you know? They gotta cook the data to make it say what they want to say.
Climate gate.
Yeah,
the old climate gate emails, exactly. Well, let's grant where we're going here in terms of what you're saying, that it's true they've come up against some technological roadblocks. But mm-hmm. I don't think that's a disinhibitor to the fact that they could someday overcome these barriers. They're quite explicit. But let me jump to a parallel track here, Pat. One of the things I've been reading a lot about and I'm preparing an article on is the notion of automation, and in particular, robots replacing humans.
Absolutely.
And I think this is a first cousin approach to transhumanism. And they don't need us. Right now they don't need a third of the workforce, from what I read. And in 20, 30 years, they may not need as much as 65 to 70% of the workforce. And that means, in their eyes, we're expendable. We're not needed. Does this fit in at all to what you've looked at with transhumanism?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the whole robot paradigm, which, of course, is based ultimately is based on artificial intelligence, being able to have robots that learn how to do tasks and stuff that we do on a repetitive basis. It doesn't mean that they have to be as intelligent as humans are today, or as able to learn as well as we can today. But most of the jobs that people do are really just repetitive jobs. You know, they're just like, you know, lips, pick up something here, move it over here, pick up another thing, move it over here, or put it in some kind of assembly process or whatever. Those kinds of jobs absolutely positively lend themselves to robots, you know, displacing people. And the forecast right now is, even for the next 10 years, is that robots may well replace up to 30% of existing jobs, especially in manufacturing, you know, as opposed to where things are today. And the unemployment is already through the roof, real unemployment. There's 93 million people in our country out of work. And that's never in the history of our country we had that many people out of work. They just give up looking for work. But if you think that's bad, just wait until companies figure out that they can buy a robot to replace a frail, argumentative, disobedient, prone to get sick employee, where you don't have any rules or regulations. You don't have to, you know, give them anything. No benefits, nothing. You just buy them. You buy a service contract, and you stick that robot in the assembly line, and it's goodbye, Susie, or goodbye, Joe, or whatever. You're fired. And you know, if you figure that they're only maybe half correct in their assessments about the future, even replacing 15 to 20% of the current workforce with robots, you know, where would this leave all the people that get displaced from these jobs? It'd leave them basically just in poverty, because where are they going to work? There's no place to work. There'd be no more jobs for them. So
they're going to be a drain upon society. And if we reflect back to Fabian socialism, which so many of these globalists seem to embrace, we're looking at maybe there really are soft kill methods. Maybe, well, vaccines and chemtrails and fluoride and all the other things we talk about, artificial sweeteners and the like, Pat, maybe that is the general plan.
Well, people without jobs die young, Dave. That's the bottom line. It really is true. If you don't have work, if you're on the lower end of the economic scale, you just die.
True.
If you get cancer, you don't hit the newspaper. You know, if you're down and out, kind of like a homeless person. A homeless person gets cancer. Do you ever see that in the newspaper?
No.
No, you don't. Well, what if some newscaster or some famous person gets cancer? It's all over the news. You know, oh, they're going here, they're going there, they're getting all this fancy treatment. But if you're just a homeless person, or you just don't have any money, you not only are never on the front page of the newspaper, but you just quietly fade away and die. And maybe a few people around you shed a tear. But poor people die young. That's a sad reality, but we just need to say it. Poor people die young. And that's what will happen in the end. And certainly Obamacare is not going to help us. You know, you say, oh, I got to have Obamacare. Well, listen, if you think the people running Obamacare are concerned about your health, man, you're not paying attention.
Oh, there are new listeners to the show. They're one of those 30,000 NPR listeners that saw the hit piece on me that have now coming into my website on a regular basis. So welcome, by the way, but you're in for a nice ride here. We're talking with Pat Wood from August Review, and he's written a terrific book called Technocracy Rising, and we're focusing on the transhumanism aspect of that. And Pat, really quickly before we go to break, let's tell people how they can get a copy of this book.
Absolutely. They can go to technocracyrising.com. That's T-E-C-H-N-O-C-R-A-C-Y, rising.com. And they can buy the book there, or they can go and get it on Amazon, too, amazon.com. Just go there and search for Technocracy Rising or Patrick Wood, whatever, or some combination. You'll get it. You'll find it. There's a Kindle version as well available. If you like an e-reader, you can buy a Kindle on Amazon.
Well, there's one more place they can get it, too.
They can visit augustforecast.com. And if you go to thecommonsenseshow.com, there's an ad on the front page right at the top that you can click on that. It will take you to technocracyrising.com.
You knew I was going to end up on that one, yes. But the flagship website for the radio show, The Common Sense Show, Pat's Wood is prominently listed at the top. And I would encourage all of you to read this book. Pat, I'm actually in my second reading now. There's just so much, you have so much data in there. I mean, it's written simplistically that the average person can understand very complex concepts, but there is so much embedded knowledge that to really get it, I found that one time through, and I'm reasonably literate, but one time through was not enough for me.
Yes. I had an experience on the way back on the airplane from Memphis the other day, and I read my book on the way back, right?
You cheated, though. You knew how it ended. Hey, Pat, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to go into break right now. We're going to come out after a real brief break. We're going to pick up on what you discovered about reading your book on the flight back from Memphis. Stay with us, folks, through the break. We got one live read, and then we're back to Pat Wood. I want to tell you about my friend Katie Whalen, and you're going to be hearing Katie in the next, or actually in the last hour, as she talks to us about healing concepts using advanced physics. And Katie wants you to know it's time to stop being a guinea pig for the money machine called Big Pharma. Katie at FamilyEssentialShop.com has some information that you really do need to hear. There's no way to stop this incessant attack upon our GMO, for the GMO foods, the barrage of airborne pathogens, our toxic environment, and a marketing and medical industry that seeks to basically put everybody in the country on medication. We are indeed the most medicated country in the world, and we only have the world's 51st longest lifespan, according to the CIA Factbook. So you need to take your health back now, using the most powerful natural methods before you end up trapped in the medical matrix that does not have your best interest in mind. Build your own home remedy kit with a full spectrum of antibacterial, infectious, viral, parasitic, inflammatory, and analgesic remedies and more from God's most powerful and perfect natural medicine, essential oils. Katie from FamilyEssentialOilsShop.com has an offer just for the Common Sense Show listeners. So this is just for you. Get every oil kit, that's in quotes, every oil kit, and you'll get the wholesale pricing of $200 in free oils with your next purchase. She will also send you your own free copy of the hardcover edition, Modern Essentials Guide to Therapeutic Use of Essential Oils. That's over $600 in savings. Don't wait until you have a crisis. Don't wait until the medical nightmare is at your door. Stock up and study up on God's medicines. Again, Katie Essentials, FamilyEssentialShop.com. You want to call her tomorrow to place your order at 720-630-3111. That's 720-630-3111 at FamilyEssentialShop.com. Our special guest is Pat Wood, and he's written a great book that I'm in my second read, and it is entitled Technocracy Rising, And you can go to his website, technocracyrising.com, to order it. You can also go to thecommonsenseshow.com. Also, it's available on your traditional book ordering websites. Pat, as we went into the break, you were talking about your flight back from Memphis and what you learned about reading your own book.
I know. I was amazed, Dave. Some of the stuff I read, I thought, did I write that? You know, it's like, maybe I forget, you know, stuff that I wrote, but I almost had this, like, this out-of-body experience reading my own book. It's, like, so weird. But, you know, you have to go in and place some of these facts back in your mind. Repetition is important here, you know, to get it. And sometimes you just need to go back in and look at it and kind of think about it and chew on it to figure out exactly what the implications are and then, you know, go on to another topic. But it's, it is a simple book to read, but it also has a lot of depth. There's an extensive bibliography in the back for anybody who wants to research further. And there's lots of footnotes and stuff that people can go check out to see where I got my information from.
Well, it's a telling experience to read your own work and listen to your own broadcasts. And in fact, honestly, I'll be honest with you, I don't like doing it because to me, I'm just my own worst critic, and it's a painful experience to listen to myself and read my own stuff. But having said that, I also have had that experience too, Pat, where you read what's written, and you're saying, wow, what was I thinking when I wrote that? But a lot of times I think it's because when we write, Pat, we kind of get in the spirit.
Yeah.
And it's almost like something external takes us over, and it's not really us typing, it's something coming through us. I mean, that's, I know it's kind of a metaphysical explanation, and I'm not one given to that kind of stuff, but that's really how I explain a lot of this stuff. And I noticed the flow to your writing in the book. It was just, because it reads this way. It's not a book you're going to read three pages at a time. It's a book that you better have a little time when you pick it up to read it, because you're going to read 30 pages, 50 pages, 80 pages at a time, because it flows so well. And the ending of one sequence takes up right where the last sequence takes over when it begins. And it's just, it's a phenomenal read. It really is. Pat, I think of all the things you've written, as far as flow goes, it's great. Now, your favorite book of mine is still The Trilaterals Over Washington. And I've been stuck on that book for decades. But this one, I think, is right there with it. Let's get down to if they achieve their immortality. Let's say they overcome these technological barriers. And I hope you're right that they won't and they're having difficulty. But let's say they do. Does that mean that what we read from some of these people, like Ted Turner, do you really think they'll try to get rid of 90% of us?
Well, I think those kind of numbers are already spelled out in the Agenda 21 document that we all have been referring to pertaining to sustainable development.
Yes.
They flat out state that there's not enough resources in the Earth, in the planetary system, to support 7 to 8 billion people, period. And the question is, well, how many people do you think it will support? And then all kinds of numbers come up, anywhere from, well, maybe 600 million to 2 billion or whatever. You know, pick a number. And whatever the number you pick is, dang, so, you know, what happens to the other 5 billion people in the planet? Well, this really isn't specified in any great detail as to what will happen other than attrition. You know, which we have, the demographics right now all around the world are very poor. You know, we're not replacing our own kind. Neither is Russia, neither is Europe, neither is Asia. And so, the demographic arrow graph is pointed downward right now. So we're going to have a shrinking, an automatic shrinking of the population. But then you have wars. You know, what if we have another world war? Well, you could wipe out quite a few people with all the mechanization you have today. And, you know, what about disease? If a good old, you know, Ebola, pandemic happens or something, a lot of people could die in that. A lot of people are dying in Africa right now. That's out of our view, but they are. They're dying. There's a lot of people dying because of, the Islamic terrorists over there as well. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world today, I think, just because. But having said that, you have to remember that there is a moral hazard right now, that if these people see it this way, then they might decide to give Humpty Dumpty a little help off the wall. And this is what probably bothers you and me the most. Would this be possible? And if you look back at history and you look at some of the the great genocides that have happened, even in the last century. You had the Chinese genocide, you had the Cambodian genocide, you had the Holodomor genocide in Europe, where they were starved out, literally. They took the food away, the main means to make food, and the people just died of starvation. You have the National Socialist genocide during World War II. You have the Bolshevik Revolution, where tens of millions died. You have the in China, same thing, where tens of millions of people died. All of these people that died, Dave, were at the hands of their own governments, or maybe a close proximity government.
Yes.
They didn't just die by disease or something. You know, we lost hundreds of millions of people in the last century to their own governments or a government close proximity, killing people wholesale.
Well, I think the University of Hawaii has a project they call the Democide Project, which is death by government.
Yes.
And if I remember, I'm quoting off of memory now for something I've not looked at for a year or two, but I think the figure is 262 million killed in the 20th century.
That's about right.
At the hand of their own government. Is that what you remember, too?
Yes, that's about right. There's a book on it. I know there's a book out there called Democide. So, yeah, that's exactly right. Death by government.
And I think that number is somewhere around five times the number of people that actually died in wars.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, you're right on the money with that. This is why when I first heard, I believe it was Alex Jones, and I first heard Alex talk about soft kill methods, I thought he was out of his mind. And he mentioned a lot of the things I rattled off in the last segment, you know, from chemtrails to fluoride to vaccine to GMOs and so forth. But as I look closer at the data of this stuff, Pat, it does seem like these things connect and they're all headed in the same direction. Could this be part of this plot as well?
Well, I just don't know if we have enough information or evidence or a smoking gun to say to connect policy A with event B. I'm not quite sure we're at that point. In the aggregate, however, we can certainly say these things are not good for anybody, and it's certainly not going to help anybody live longer. For instance, if you spray into the atmosphere metallic substances or any other kind of substance for that matter, it doesn't belong in the atmosphere, it's going to float down to the ground as it has in California. It's going to infect the soil. It's going to affect the ecosystem, the plants and stuff that we eat. This cannot possibly result in anything good to help mankind. Same thing with like fluoridation issues. And somebody could argue about vaccines. I don't even want to get into that. But, all of these policies that they're executing without our approval or assent, none of them are doing anything to extend life, just probably the opposite. You know, whatever, and maybe it's an unintended consequence. Maybe the people doing chemtrails figure, not going to hurt anybody. It's, you know, better we save the atmosphere than, you know, worry about the effects it's going to have on man. Well, that's shallow thinking at best. You could say, well, maybe that's what happened. Or, you know, you could figure, well, they're saving the planet and they're going to wipe out a few, you know, a bunch of people along the way. I don't know if they're thinking that, honestly. But in the aggregate, it does not look good. In the grand pattern of things, it does not look good. It's headed in the wrong direction for us.
Well, if they continue on this parallel path to technocracy and transhumanism with this automation inroads they're making, which are fantastic in terms of how far they've brought this, they don't need people. So that's what I go back to. To me, there's your motive. Now, you know, and I realize, too, we have not ascribed absolute proof as to intent. But we do have motive, and we do have stuff that we're doing on a mass scale to people that aren't good for lifespan.
That's right. We see it happening, and we need to be aware of it. We shouldn't just stick our head in the sand like most people do.
And then we got Bill Gates and these other industrialists. They basically want to sterilize the third world. Now, I know that's a slight exaggeration, but if you look at what he's involved in and basically birth control ideas for the third world, I think he's on the right track. By the way, I wanted to get your view on one thing you had brought up, and you kind of mentioned this, an oh-by-the-way comment, but what's your view on the food carrying capacity of the planet? We have 7.1 billion people. What is your view on terms of how much food we could produce to feed how many people per day?
Honestly, I think we have a capacity. If everybody just get their hands off of it, you know, trying to regulate it, monitor it, or whatever, control it, we have the capacity to grow so much food in this world that everybody could, not only could everybody alive today could have 3 squares a day, but probably 3 times the population in the world today could still have 3 squares a day. And it's not going in that direction, but how much food could the earth produce? A whole heck of a lot more than it's producing right now. But here's the interesting thing. I grew up on a farm, by the way. I have farming in my blood. I can tell you what farmers need to grow plants is carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is the element that combines with sunlight to produce photosynthesis in cells to grow green plants and food. And if you wanted to create an economic or an agricultural system that would just blow your socks off, all you'd have to do is increase the density of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere by 5 or 10%. There would be a harvest boon across the world. But here's the thing. The climate change people have convinced us that carbon dioxide is bad and that you should eliminate it. You should, no. We don't want any carbon dioxide. It's warming the planet. It's screwing everything up, and it's going to drive us into who knows what, and the seas are going to rise. This is absolutely insane. And the periods in history that have been measured with higher densities in carbon dioxide are periods when there was an abundance of agriculture. I mean, everything grew just like crazy. And, you know, they're fighting against this policy today to wipe out carbon dioxide in the world. But we have the ability in the world to produce incredible amounts of food. If we could get, you know, companies like Monsanto, for instance, the heck out of the seed business, they have control or own almost 90% of all the agricultural seed stock in the world now. These people meddling with the seed stock is nuts. It's absolutely crazy, because if there is ever a time in the future when their seeds, for one reason or another, don't work in the climate, you know, the particular climate, or whether there's drought or too much rain or any other thing, chemical you put on the field, it's setting us up for a huge catastrophe, a food catastrophe in the future, rather than a huge food production for people in the future.
The figure that I most often read is that we have a food carrying production rate on this planet, not capacity, but rate of enough to feed 27 billion people.
Yeah.
But I do grant the elite one thing. Having is not the same as distributing. And I do know that some people live in more, quote, inconvenient areas, and distribution can be an issue.
Yep.
But we do not have a food shortage. I was glad to hear you say that. What about drinkable water? We read that, 50 to 60% of the people in the world don't have adequate and clean drinking water. How do you react to that?
You know, I don't react to it very well at all. We haven't lost one drop of water to this planet ever since it was created. The same amount of water is here that was here 5,000 years ago. And so there's no shortage of water. The water is still there. It's how you process the water and get the people to drink. There are ways in Africa, for instance, where people have substandard water to give them clean water, very simply, very inexpensively, and everybody's happy. But here's the thing with the global elite, and I've seen this pattern repeat so many times in the last 100 years. Scarcity is the driver to the global elite achieving their plans of global domination. Scarcity is the driver. Whether it's scarcity of oil, whether it's scarcity of energy, whether it's scarcity of water or food or any other element that you can imagine, scarcity is always part of their plan. Create an economic scarcity and then panic people or spook people into doing what they want them to do. And, you know, we've seen this. Energy, for instance, when the Trilateral Commission first got into control of the United States government with the election of Jimmy Carter. What was the very first thing that happened after that was all of a sudden we had an energy crisis. I don't know if you remember that, but the price of gas went through the roof. And it was like, oh my gosh, we're not, you know, we're dependent on all this foreign oil and stuff. And, you know, it's like kind of hear a young Al Gore echoing in the background, you know, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. The seas are going to rise. But the price of fuel went right through the roof. And we were told for some period of time that there was no turning back from that, that, you know, we're all doomed and the economy's going to crash. And, you know, with all this energy, we just don't have it anymore. We can't run our factories. We can't drive our cars. There was lines around blocks to get into one gas station to try
right,
to
get
out of the gas. Oh, my gosh. See, scarcity and shortage is always in the game plan of the elite when they're moving on a particular topic.
You know, Pat, along those lines, we both live in Arizona, and our major daily in Maricopa County, the Phoenix metropolitan area, is the Arizona Republic, and they've been running almost every day. You'll find it on page 7 or page 1, but it's there somewhere, and almost every day, the fact that Arizona is headed for a serious water crisis, and we could be nearly out of water in 6 years is the figure that they're using. And I believe, too, that I know Paul Gosar, one of our congressmen here from Arizona, thinks this is a bunch of hogwash as well. Is this going on in other states? That's my question.
Oh, absolutely.
So people who are reading a paper in Nashville where Annie's at, or in San Diego, of course, we know they have a water crisis there, or in Florida. When they read their newspapers, is it likely they're reading the same thing that you and I are reading?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. See, this is a mantra that was brought down from the United Nations years ago. This isn't a brand new phenomena. The whole issue of water shortage has been cooking in the bowels of the United Nations for a long time. And so now that there has been an actual drought-like conditions in California, all of a sudden it becomes national headlines. Oh my gosh, we really are running out of water. Well, you know, California, if it had managed its water in the right way in the first place, they wouldn't be in the condition they're in today. They would have enough water to probably last 3 or 4 or 5 years and make it through any drought. That was just common sense 100 years ago. But it's not common sense today with the establishment running because they want shortage. And let me tell you, I just got to throw this out too. It was Mr. Bruce Babbitt, once the governor of our state here and once coming from a big ranching family up in northern Arizona. He was Secretary of the Interior during the Clinton administration, and he was also a member of the Trilateral Commission. Now, just having said that, it was Bruce Babbitt, while Secretary of the Interior, who decided to blow up some, you know, whatever, 15,000 or 20,000 dams across America and return all these, hydroelectric projects and stuff just back to nature, get rid of all those dams, forget the farmers, forget everybody else saving up water for a rainy day, and just blow up these stinking dams, he said, and everybody's going to be happy doing that. Well, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life. Really, it is. Why would they want to blow up, for instance, the Klamath Dam up in Northern California and just waste all that water? The farmers up there would die. They'd be out of business in a month. And all the industries that depend on that water and stuff, they'd be out of business immediately if they blew the dam up. And all the people downstream from that aren't going to get any water for agriculture or drinking or raise a water table or anything else. This is absolute insanity. It's a man-made crisis.
Exactly. Well, I do have a suggestion on what's behind it, because you know what'll grow when those dams go away, or when they do go away or have gone away? Algae.
Yes, it will.
And let me tell you, when I was writing a 7-part series on the funny business going on with the Gulf oil explosion from 5 years ago, I discovered that the Corexit that they put into the water, first of all, did nothing to break up the oil. It simply submerged it. But it also took the oxygen out of the water. And the only thing that would grow up on the shoreline was algae. And what's happened since the Gulf oil explosion, starting in 2011, is we see a plethora of algae farms for biofuels springing up along the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you know, we know, Pat, you've been in this business a long time, and I'm beginning to discover this, too. The globalists don't do something with just one objective in mind. They're usually dual and triple purposed. And I think that, yes, they get control of water by creating scarcity. They drive people off their farmlands to create a food shortage along these same lines. But I also think they're looking at algae as a future biofuel. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think you're probably right. there's still going to be a shortage of energy, but the thing is they're going to be controlling it, and they're going to be telling people what they can and can't do with the energy that they have available. I would kind of like to redefine a little bit the topic of convergence that we started out the show with, just because I feel like I didn't give people the right definition, or not the whole definition. I'm reading right off a website here. It's a wiki site that has to do with convergence. And what people need to remember is the acronym. N as in nanotechnology, B as in biotechnology, I as in information science, and C as in computer science. NBIC, NBIC. That's the acronym that people need to go look at. And here's the definition. It's the ongoing unification of nanotechnology, biotechnology, information sciences, and cognitive science. The developments in these fields are not just complement to each other. The fields are gradually merging. Okay, that's the definition. The fields are gradually merging. So this is what convergence is. The ongoing scientific and technological revolution to apply technology to the condition of man. That's what they're doing. And this is happening in universities all around the world, like ASU right here, and any other state university, same things going on. All of the other Ivy League colleges, all of them, same thing. If they have science departments, exactly what's happening. The NBIC convergence are the fields of nanotechnology, biotechnology, information sciences, and cognitive science. They're all merging together into a single unified discipline of science.
When I first heard you talk about this, I heard you for about 30 seconds and I knew you were right. And that's before I even got into your data, Pat. Annie and I have a dear friend who used to be in the NSA named Vance Davis. And one of the things, and Vance used to be really active, and he's kind of withdrawn to family life now, but he told us several times and said it publicly that the NSA, their agents at certain levels are taught that what's going on the planet is ultimately a war between good and evil, and it's really true, and so forth and so on, and the bad guys want to get control of the soul. And he was adamant on this point that this was part of his NSA training. I think this is what you're talking about here.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
They do want control of the soul. And that's, you know, that's the whole, that's in my estimation, that's the whole idea behind technocracy, is to so limit and control the movements of people by voluntary consent whenever possible. It's better to own their soul to get voluntary consent than to have to beat them to death, you know, to drive them to a particular outcome. I think we see that all around us today. For instance, young people getting just sucking up technology now, you know, like getting addicted to games and addicted to the internet and the, you know, all other kinds of things. It's a total addiction. I mean, psychologists will say this. Young people today are addicted by the internet. And that means that their soul has just been sold to the devil, if you will. I'm not saying the internet's the devil, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
It's like when you're addicted to something, you don't have control over yourself anymore. You lost control. And you do what other people tell you to do, not what you want to do. And that's the essence, kind of the essence of losing your soul, in my estimation.
Vance even went a step further than what you're saying here, too. He went on to say that he was aware of research that was going on, kind of like basement CIA stuff, where they were actually trying to unlock the code of the soul in an attempt to remove it, control it, do what they will with it.
Sure, yeah.
Do you think that is part of what this convergence is all about? They're working to that end?
That's what Ray Kurzweil is trying to do right now at Google. They're trying to figure out a way to download a person's brain into a computer somehow, to where the person's soul, personality, soul, mind, will, emotions, whatever, will exist in a digital form rather than in your human body. That's exactly what they're trying to do today. That's one of their big goals. Because that's the pathway to immortality. So if you can download your brain into the bits and store it on a, you know, a CD drive or whatever, and then, you know, let's say a few years later, you're living in the computer, if you will, and a few years later, a body comes along, whereas, you know, somebody died or whatever, or lost their mind or something, and you can impart yourself into that body, or, like, re-upload yourself, or maybe there's an android that gets built that has all the computer technology inside of it, but limbs and arms and legs and stuff like that, and you can upload yourself into that, and you can live on forever in an android body, upgrading yourself as necessary. Or maybe you want to fly through space and go to Mars or whatever. You can just load yourself in the computer, and you can have access to a little, you know, window port or whatever through a TV eye, and you know, you can just go through space forever and ever, living immortally in a sense, going wherever you want to go throughout space. You know, these are crazy ideas. Like I said initially, they're not one inch closer to actually doing this than they were when they started.
Well, I think the reason they won't, and this is my own crude hypothesis, but I believe the soul permeates every cell, and I don't think you can separate out what's in every cell.
I don't think you can either.
That's why I think ultimately you might be right from that perspective, and they may fail. Pat, we just got a few seconds left, so let's take a moment here and let the listening audience know how they can get a copy of the book that will discuss many of the concepts that we talked about tonight.
Yes, let's start out with Amazon.com. Just go there and search for Technocracy Rising. There's also a Kindle version available. That's for electronic readers. My website, the book website, is technocracyrising.com, just like it sounds. And augustforecast.com is my blog site, where I also have the book available. And as we said earlier, it's also available on the premier flagship website of the Common Sense, thecommonsenseshow.com, featuring Dave Hodges.
Okay. Well, Pat, on that great and rousing endorsement, we've got to end, but I do encourage people to go get Pat's book. I'm on my second read, and it's better than the first time through. Thanks so much, Pat.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
We'll be back in hour number two with John Durash, and he's going to go after the bad guys, and we're going to tell you how. Stay tuned, everybody.
On Facebook, on the news, and in bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.